Welcome to OU.org and www.etshalom.com. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom, and today we are going to be continuing our study of the book of Shmuel, Shmuel Bet Perek He, a monumental perek in the history of Am Yisrael, and personally for David. Because up until this point, David has been accepted by the people of Yehuda, and slowly the other tribes of the north have come to recognize him as their king. However, his throne, as it were, it continues to be in Hebron, the capital of Yehuda, and now we will see how things transpire. By the end of this parak, there will be a new capital and a new reality to the monarchy. Vayavol kol shiftei Yisrael David Hebrona. So everybody came to Hebron. Kol shiftei Yisrael can't be literal. All the people, it means the leaders of the tribes. And they said, here we are, hinenu, which is the plural of hineni, as it were, here to you, do your bidding. Atzmacha uvasarcha anachnu. We are your flesh and your bone. Literally, your bone and your flesh. In other words, we are all one, and this is bridging the gap that has existed really since the times of the Shoftim, early in the period of the Shoftim, between the northern tribes and Yehuda. Gam etmol gam shilshom biyot sha'u melech aleinu. Even yesterday and the day before, which is biblical idiom, we've seen it already before, which means since ever, even when Sha'u was the king over us, ata yita hamotzi v'hammevi et Yisrael, you were the ones one who took us out to war. Now there's a certain irony in what they're saying, because if you recall back from our study of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Shaul was chosen specifically for his military prowess. He was not chosen to be a political leader or religious leader, but rather a military leader, really on the model of the Shoftim, but the difference being a dynasty. And nonetheless, Shaul was not the one who took them out to war, but rather David was. So in a sense, David was the people's choice, and David was the one who had fulfilled that position already. In a sense, the people are saying, you already have been the king. And God said to you, we have to figure out where they're getting this from, you will shepherd my flock, Israel. This is the first time since Sefer Bamidbar, Perak Chav Zayin, that we find the image of Am Yisrael as being a flock and the leader is the shepherd. You will shepherd my people, which is of course very appropriate for David. It was very appropriate the last time it was mentioned, which was when Moshe came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, if I'm going to die before leading the people in, you should appoint someone over them so they are not like a flock without a shepherd. Moshe and David had that in common, that they both were shepherds before being summoned to greatness. And you'll be a leader over Israel. Now, where do the people get the idea that God said this? Well, there's several possibilities. One would be if they were aware of what had happened years ago in Beit Lechem when Shmuel had come ostensibly to bring a korban back in Perek Tet Zayin, but really to anoint David. Or perhaps it is, as we saw in several occasions, such as in Perek Chaf Dalet in Shmuel Aleph, when Shaul came into the cave and David's men said to him, we assume whisperingly, here is the day that God has said, I'm handing your enemy over to you. In other words, the actions reflect God's will. So if Shaul has been handed over, has been put into a vulnerable position, it's as if God has handed him over. This is something that goes both ways, because in Perek Chaf Gimel, when David went to save the people of Keilah, Shaul's reaction was, God has handed him over to me, put him into a city that is walled and gated. In any case, that's how they respond to David. Either the events dictate or the history of David dictates. So they all came to the king, to David in Hebron. He made a brit with them in Hebron. Lifnei Adonai, again, as we've seen many times, this phrase, before God, unclear what it means. Was there a korban? Was there somebody standing there with an ephod? Certainly the Aaron was not there. And certainly nothing more than that. They anointed him, which means this is a second anointment. The first anointment we read about in Perek Dalet, when the people of Yehuda came and anointed David. Now the people of Israel come and bridge the chasm that's existed between the north and the south with a statement of saying, you are one of us. Even though you are from the south, you were the one who led the armies of the north out to war. And they anointed him as a king. This double anointment will come back in Perek Yotet, but we will see that in exactly 2 weeks. Ben Shloshim Shana David B'Mocho. Now this reminds us, of course, of Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph in Shmuel Aleph, when we had the very bizarre statement, Ben Shana Sha'ul B'Mocho, and I shared with you the observation of Rabbi Tanchum HaYerushalmi that there was really a missing word or a missing number in there. Here we have the full Pasuk. David was 30 years old when he became king, Arba'im Shana Malach, and he ruled for 40 years. This does not tell us anything about how old David was when he was first anointed by Shmuel. Doesn't tell us about how long David was in Shaul's favor and how long he was running, but now we get the number that he was 30 when he became king. Interesting couple of correlations. First of all, we now see that David went through 3 coronations. He was privately anointed among his brothers. He was then anointed by his tribe and then anointed by the entire people. And that parallels Shaul, who was anointed privately by Shmuel, and then he was anointed at the lottery when he was hiding, and then he was anointed at Gilgal with the big celebration. But see how these two are very different. In all of David's anointments, there is never opposition to him, and it telescopes out in a very natural way, going from his family to his tribe to the nation. In the case, however, of Shaul, it goes in a less organized fashion, more of a haphazard fashion, and of course the results are very, very different. The opening coronation, Shmuel only has a small vial of oil, and he has to send the Na'ar away to talk to Shaul privately. And the second one, Shaul is hiding, and even though he's picked by the lottery, they can't find him. And the third one is marred by the fact that Shaul brought the Korban early and immediately was told that he would not have a dynasty. So David standing against Shaul. There is another interesting piece here that David is 30 when he becomes king. That is exactly the age that Yosef was when he was brought out of prison, properly interpreted Paro's dreams, and was elevated to the position of regent of Egypt. The parallel between Yosef and David is one that we already mentioned back in Perek Tet Zayin when we noted that both Yosef and David were considered to be outcasts in their family, and one of the youngest children around, and both were involved, as we see in Yosef's life, the beginning of Parsha Vayeshev with shepherding. Although after that we don't see Yosef shepherding, of course. We do see David shepherding in Perek Yud Zayin also, but that's also the end of that road. In any case, Ben Shloshim Shana David Mocho, Arba'im Shana Malach. So he was king for 40 years. He died at 70. The famous Pasuk in Tehillim, Yimeshnotenu Behem Shivim Shana, is credited to be about David, even though the title of that parak is Tefillah L'Moshe. V'chevron Malach al Yudah Sheva Shanim V'Shishah Chodashim, as the text told us a couple of prakim ago, he ruled in Chevron for 7 years and 6 months, which means it should be 32 years and 6 months in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim Malach Shloshim V'Shalosh Shana, but it was 33 years in Yerushalayim, which means one of two things. Either these numbers are inexact, and somehow it adds up to about 40, or else, it's not 40, it's 40 and a half, but 40 is the kind of number that we want to keep, so we leave it at 40, even though he's really, really rules for a little longer than that. Chazal have what to say about this and maintain that David had a tzarat for 6 months, and that as a result, those 6 months don't count in the total. But mentioning that David ruled for 40 years puts David firmly in the tradition of the Shoftim, the finest of whom, with the exception of Ehud, ruled for 40 years, specifically Gidon, who is, of course, the most successful of the Shoftim. Vayelech HaMelech Barashav Yerushalayim. So then the king and his people went to Yerushalayim, El HaYivusi Yoshev HaAretz. He went to the Yivusi, who lived there. We know that the Yivusi were the inhabitants of Yerushalayim in Sefer Yoshua, where Binyamin is castigated for not successfully conquering the city and living with the Yivusim there. We know in Sefer Shoftim, in Perek Aleph, also in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Yod Tet, in the terrible story of Pilegesh Begivah, the man and his concubine, the man refuses to sleep in Yivus, which is Yerushalayim because it's a non-Jewish city, And now David moves to conquer the city of Yerushalayim. Of course, what's sort of strange is that Yerushalayim had already been conquered in the times of Yehoshua, in Yehoshua Yod. What became of that is very unclear. In any case, why did he go to Yerushalayim? Well, the simplest explanation, without getting involved in having to seek midrashim that would point to ancient sanctity that of which everyone was aware, which is a common midrashic theme, but the simplest way to look at it is that Yerushalayim is geographically placed quite perfectly to rule over the whole country, because it is in the middle of the country. It borders critically on the territory of Binyamin and Yehuda, so that David, being from Yehuda and having the biggest challenge will be from Shevet Binyamin, with the Shevet that was ruling until now, wanted to place his kingdom right there. He went to the Yevusi, Vayomer leDavid leMor, and the word came out, Lo tavo heina, ki mehesecha ha'ivrim v'hapischim leMor, lo yavo David heina. This is one of two very bizarre psukim in this parak that is very hard to take apart and understand. Chazal have their understanding of it with an oath that was made by Avram to Avimelech. How that relates to the Yebusi is very difficult to comprehend. That they said to David, you cannot come here until you get rid of the lame and the blind and the lame who are saying David cannot come here. And so the way some people explain it is that in the ancient world they believed that lame and blind and other disabled people had a particular ability to curse, and that they set these people up cursing David that he should not be able to come into the city, and so David knew until he got rid of these guys he wouldn't be able to come in. Perhaps not. There's lots of theories about what this means. V'alkot David mitzudat Zion hi'ir David. So David conquered the tower or the fortress of Zion, which is Ir David. Ir David, as anybody who's been there, and if not, you should go. Ir David, which is just to the south of the dung gate of the old city of Yerushalayim, is where the original old city was, and you go there and you could see how the city was really a thin strip that ran on a south-north line, and very little of it really was included in what today we call the old city of Yerushalayim. In any case, So he said, anybody who slays the Yebusi and touches the pipe, we'll talk about that in a minute, and the lame and the blind who David hates, and that's why people say a blind and a lame cannot come into the house. Is this a reference to a later statement that's made after David's life about the Beit HaMikdash? Certain people were barred there because they had been used in this fashion of enmity in David's time. Or is it referring to David's house? Unclear again. That's the other pasuk. But the mention of the tzinor, which for years nobody really had any idea what was going on with the tzinor, has been suggested of late as a reference to the water pipe, the huge water carrier that was used to get water into the city, and that was the way that David and his men perhaps entered the city through the tzinor. And you can see it when you walk through Nikbat Chizkiyahu. When you come out, you can see that tzinor that was discovered. Vayeshev David b'mtsuda v'ekrav la Ir David. He called this the city of David. Vayeven David saviv min ha-milo v'avaita. And he built outwards from the milo, which seems to be the filling around this area, he built up. And now we have a parenthetic sort of editorial note. David continued to grow and become great, and God was with him. And now, now we have the first international contact with David as king. David, of course, had contacts both with Melech Moab and Melech Gat, but that was when David was on the run. Now the king of Tzor up in Lebanon sends a message, this Chiram, we're going to meet Chiram, or perhaps another Chiram, later on in Malachim, but this Chiram sent a message through messengers to David, Matser Azim, he sent cedar trees, V'charashe Eitz, and woodsmiths, woodcutters, V'charashe Evan, and masons, Evan Kir, V'ivnu Vayit LeDavid. That was his gift, to build a palace for David. That palace has possibly been uncovered. The foundations of that palace have possibly been uncovered recently by the archaeologist Eilat Mazar working at Ir David. Check the website out. It's great stuff. And anybody who has the opportunity, go to Ir David, see what's being discovered, find out about what we are unearthing, literally, about our glorious past. David now knew that Hashem had set him up to be the king over Israel, and that his kingdom was raised up for his people. In other words, David's kingdom was raised up not for himself, not for his aggrandizement, but rather for God's people. So David took on more concubines and wives. Now it's not David and his few wives and few sons. Now he's suddenly playing the role of a king with lots of wives. And he had more sons and daughters born. We're going to hear the names of some of the sons. These are the sons. Shamua, Veshovav, Venatan, Ushlomo. The mention of Natan here is a little bit strange because Natan will show up very soon in two Prakim as the court prophet of David. And the question is whether that's just a common name or whether this Natan was named after that one, or we'll have to see. Those 11 sons born to David, along with the 6 that he had in Hebron, makes a relatively large family, and that's just some of the sons who are mentioned. Now the Plishtim heard that David had been anointed, and for the Plishtim this is very bad news, because David knows them. They also know David to be a valiant warrior. David is not preoccupied with other things like Shaul was, so they could see themselves as in trouble and preemptively would want to stop him. So all the Plishtim came to seek out David, meaning to kill him. So David went down to the Mitzudah, which evidently was the lower part of the city. The Plishtim did what we've seen them do in every battle. They spread out on the field. They spread out in Emek Rephaim. Rephaim, by the way, are ghosts. And Emek Rephaim, which is a storied, beautiful street in the heart of the new city of Yerushalayim, were wonderful cafes and very trendy area. But Emek Rephaim really is the name of a valley that was on the outside of Yerushalayim, and that's where the Plishtim spread out. So David consulted Hashem, we assume again through the Ephod, should I go after them? Will you give them over to me? Go after them, go up after them, because I'm going to hand them over to you. David came to a place called Baal Pratsim. Now that's a name that we would not be very proud of if you think about it, because any name that you find in Eretz Yisrael which is preceded by the word Baal means that it was a worship site dedicated to the worship of Baal. But we'll see what happens to this name. Vayakem David Sham, Vayakem Sham David, and David slew the Plishtim there. Vayomer Paratz Adonai Toivai Lefanai, Keferetz Mayim. God has opened up my enemies in front of me like bursting of water. In other words, what David was doing was playing on the name of the place. The place was Baal Pratsim. Alright, so David said, aha, what's the association? Hashem has opened up this place, the enemies in front of me, like bursting forth of water. Hakem Karashem Makomahu Baal Pratsim. Therefore, he called the place Baal Pratsim. Now, throughout Tanakh, we find place names that are associated with actions, and the question always has to be asked, does the action precede it? Did this name have, this place have no name whatsoever or some other name? And that the action was so significant that that's why it got this new name. An example, a case in point is Yaakov waking up outside of the town of Luz and changing it to Beit El because he had that great vision. Or, and this is usually the case, did the name pre-exist? And once it was already there, then the event that happened was associated with that name, midrashically, and in those cases, you can see that the association is sort of not exactly forced, but if you really wanted to call the place after the event, you would have found an easier name. For instance, here, David would have called it Peretz. but not Baal Pratzim. Why would he give it a name that's associated with idolatry? Evidently, it means that was always the name. And David is just saying, oh, here's another meaning to the name, one that's a little bit more to our liking. Case in point is Gilgal in Yoshua Parakeh. They came to a place called Gilgal, and then Hashem at that point commanded them to do Brit Milah, and then said, Hayom Galoti et Chapat Mitzvah Me'alechem, I have rolled away the shame of Egypt from you, and therefore it's called Gilgal. All right, very good. But if that's the case, then call it Galo, or Icherpa, or there's some other names you could give, which would be more directly associated with the event. Rather, the place is always called Gilgal, and it's a midrash shem. Moshe Garciel at Bar Ilan University has really done the yeoman's work on the development of midrash shem in Tanakh, and highly recommended. Some of his books are available in English also. In any case, that's Baal Pratzim. Vayazvu sham et atzabehem, vayisaim David v'anashav. So the Plishtim left their idols there, and David and his men took them to get rid of them. Vayasifu od Plishtim la'alot v'anachu be'emek Rephaim. The Plishtim came up again, and again spread out in Emek Rephaim. Shal David v'adonai v'ayomer lo ta'aleh. This time God said, don't go at them. Hasev al acharehem. Go in back of them. In other words, ambush. Uvata lahem imur b'chaim. Come to them from the opposite direction of Bechaim, a place that we heard about back in Yoshua Perek Bet. When you hear people marching up on top of Bechaim, az techaratz, then go after them. Ki az yatzah Adonai lefanecha, then you know that God is coming with you. Lakot b'machane plishtim. And David did exactly what God said, and he slay the plishtim from Geva, which we're familiar with, all the way until Gezer, further in the south. So David trapped them, and the wisdom of this was that the first time the Plishtim had come, they had had a frontal attack. So that's what they're expecting. Now David had circled them back, according to God's direction, attacked them from the back, had them on the run, had chased them south, and killed many of them. We're not done with the Plishtim, but we won't hear much from them for in the future. In any case, we will continue with Perek Vav now that David has settled in Yerushalayim. Perek Vav is sort of the next stage of bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and Perek Zayin is David's great desire to culminate all of this activity with the building of the Mikdash. Everyone should have a wonderful day.